Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We've been doing a lot of interviews just in the last couple days. This morning, I had the opportunity to appear on C-SPAN for 35 minutes defending Colorado's personhood amendment opposite Planned Parenthood employee, former employee, Crystal Klinkenbeard. And it went well, I believe. 35 minutes, start at 9 o'clock Eastern time. And that's been available all day today online, but just in the last few minutes, the link broke. And the link is not working. And so hopefully C-SPAN will get that link. We've alerted them. And a lot of people, we think, will want to watch that debate on the personhood amendment. Also, Brian Rohrbaugh, I told you the president of American Right to Life, had an interview scheduled this week with the BBC. They were at his home, a TV film crew, and spent a couple hours interviewing Brian Rohrbaugh. He also did an interview on XM Radio, XM Sirius Satellite Radio. And I believe that went very well. Joe Scott, the founder of Pro-Life Colorado, a pro-life activist hero with her husband, Ken Scott. They save about 100 babies a year at the local Planned Parenthood with the help of other Christian pro-life activists out on the streets. Joe Scott and Dee DeRoche, another pro-life hero, did an interview with Al Jazeera TV today. And that's interesting. That also was about the personhood amendment, and that's for the English language version of Al Jazeera. So I don't know how we'll find out more about that. Joe Scott told me she'd let us know here at Bob Enyart Live if that interview shows up on their Al Jazeera website. Pretty bizarre, no? Al Jazeera. I mean, that's just bizarre. They opened up shop in the U.S. a couple years ago, and they're reporting on Colorado's personhood amendment effort, Amendment 48. Please vote yes on Amendment 48. Also, I had the opportunity to do an interview with ABC News today, and it had to do with American Right to Life and their report card on John McCain, comparing John McCain and Barack Obama and showing how aggressively pro-abortion John McCain is. And they said they expected an article out by tomorrow. This is a print article on their website at abcnews.com. And so we'll find out if American Right to Life is quoted. As the reporter was talking to me, she had the website in front of her, American Right to Life Action. And that is artlaction.com. If you haven't seen that, it's making quite a stir on blogs, being emailed to Christians and pro-lifers around the country, the secular media starting to get a load of this John McCain report card on the issue of abortion. And it's startling. Just this past week, in the third presidential debate, he mentioned the judges that he was proud to have voted for to confirm, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer, two radical pro-aborts. And he said he has no litmus test when it comes to his pro-life position. So he's promised that he will not appoint specifically pro-life judges, and he's proud of the pro-abortion judges he has nominated. And this reporter, Andrea with ABC News, she said, Bob, the two issues that other Christian conservative groups are saying that the reason they're supporting John McCain, even though they've always opposed him, is homosexual marriage and abortion. And she said, you're right when you point out that John McCain voted against a defense of marriage amendment to define marriage as between one man and one woman. John McCain voted against it. And we pointed out, yeah, I pointed out to Andrea with ABC News. Yeah, the funny thing is we get emails from conservative Christian organizations and they say, vote for John McCain. Barack Obama voted against the marriage amendment. And we chuckle here. We think, so did John McCain. He did the same thing. I mean, he is not even supportive of marriage between one man and one woman, of all things. So we'll take a couple calls, and then I want to hear a little bit of audio in a moment, and it has to do with the movie Obsession. Well, that movie Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West, millions of copies of that DVD have gone out all over the U.S., and there's a sequel out called The Third Jihad, and it is showing. The Denver premiere is tonight here, of course, in Denver at 7:45, and it's at the Shea Artiste Theater at 2800 South Colorado Boulevard. Now, it's $20 a person, but not only do you see the movie, the sequel to Obsession, but also you get a copy of the DVD. So it's well worth it. 7:45 this evening. I'm going to find out if I could make it. I hope I can. Tomorrow in studio, we'll have Tom Trento here, and he's the director for the Watch Obsession educational campaign. So there's a lot to talk about. Right now, let's go to the phones in Denver, 1-800-8-NYART. Steven, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
Hi, Bob and Yart. How are you?
Doing well, sir. What's up?
I watched the television commercial a few times, and it talks about a minute 48 and all.
Yes, sir.
And they're talking about voting no, but I vote yes.
All right, Steven, I'm glad to hear that.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate that very much.
Okay.
Steven has seen the Planned Parenthood commercials, vote no on 48. He called in and said, I'm voting yes. Thank you, Steven. I appreciate that. All right. Our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Let's listen just to this trailer for the movie Obsession, and then I want to tell you about this premiere again this evening. When Terror Strikes, this video, have you seen it? Death to America, they're saying.
Obsession, Radical Islam. Obsession, the threat of radical Islam.
Obsession, the documentary movie about Islam's war against the West.
You can take over USA. You can take over UK. We trust in Allah.
It gives a scary look inside the extremist world.
I'll turn into a suicide warrior.
Chilling. It is chilling.
It is shocking beyond belief.
This needs to be seen by everybody in America, in Europe.
Do you think Americans grasp the full threat of radical Islam?
Death to America. Death to America.
Well, you can definitely get an incredible education by watching this film, Obsession.
This film, Obsession, is without exaggeration one of the most important films of our time. You must see it.
All right. Now, our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART. 1-800-836-9278. Last week, David Horowitz, his Freedom Center, had an event on about 100 college campuses, a week-long Islamofascism Awareness Week, and they had a Stop the Jihad on Campus effort. And now another organization, Leadership Institute, is working with Horowitz. And their goal is to bring screenings of the movie Obsession to 500 college campuses. And that's a worthwhile project. And so it'll be interesting tomorrow to have Tom Trento in studio. He's the director for the Watch Obsession educational campaign. And again, the sequel to this movie, and millions of copies of this DVD have been distributed throughout this country and going around the world also. But now the sequel is out, and it's called The Third Jihad, and it's showing its Denver premiere is this evening. Che Artiste Theater, 2800 South Colorado Boulevard, this evening at 7:45. Let's go to Denver. The phone number here, 800-8-NYARTS. This is a great day to call into the show, express your thoughts on the battles around us. 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. In Denver, Monty, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing well, sir.
Hey, thank you for your show and for all the efforts you put into worthwhile causes.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw something out there because I keep hearing people talk about Barack, people talk about McCain, this and that, but nobody talks about Chuck Baldwin.
Chuck Baldwin is running for president on the Constitution Party ticket, and they are on the ballot in Colorado, isn't that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, they're on the ballot in Colorado, and actually a number of other states. Do you know the number, Monty?
I don't know the number, but I know there's a write-in option regardless of where you are.
Not in all states. In some states, you have to be registered. But I think the Constitution Party is on the ballot in a couple dozen states with Chuck Baldwin as their presidential candidate. And Chuck Baldwin, you probably have something you want to tell us about him. I can tell you that his stand on abortion is exciting in that he says this. He says, if I were to win and become the president, I would use the authority of the office to forcibly stop the killing of children in America. And that's pretty encouraging, and that's somebody who understands the authority of government.
Yes, sir. He's also somebody who understands the Constitution Party sort of says a lot, but understands how we got into this financial mess and not just up there rewarding the ones who actually caused the problem in the first place, because this blackmail bill that they just passed, $700 billion, which is $7 trillion by the time you get into the fractional reserve system, ultimately it's just that, it's blackmail. It makes the culprit look like the rescuer and offloads everything back onto the taxpayers at double.
Well, it's wrong for the government to do the things they've been doing all along, to coerce banks to give loans to people who can't afford the loans. That's wrong. It's wrong for the government to bail out private industry, telling executives of enormous corporations that if you're big enough, you could take enough risk, be irresponsible enough, that if it all crashes, our bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., led by the Republican Party, they will bail you out. They'll bail you out. It's wrong to take money from struggling families and use it to bail out Wall Street investment bankers and insurance firms. It's just wrong. And, of course, this is being led by George W. Bush and his Republican Secretary of the Treasury. So it's wrong.
Amen. Well, and you and I both know, because we've read the book, we know what happens in Revelation, and ultimately there's a preparation going on for the New World Order, One World Empire, and so the things that are happening are very predictable, but they're still wrong.
Well, and I hope the Lord comes back soon, Monty, but Christians have been hoping that for 2,000 years. Indeed, the apostles wrote about it in the New Testament, and those who were living in Jerusalem, they sold their homes and their land, hoping, expecting he would come back soon. And there's always the opportunity for Christians to interpret current events and say, look, it's really soon now. It's right around the corner. But for 2,000 years, Christians have been wrong on that. You know, in 1000 AD, they looked at the Black Plague in Europe. They looked at the passing of Halley's Comet. And they said, this is it. Signs in the heavens, pestilence. But, of course, it wasn't it. Y2K, a lot of Christians thought, oh, I don't know, the second coming was being ushered in on a computer bug. That, of course, didn't happen. Way back, May 14th, 1948, Israel became a nation. Praise God for that. But Christians said the generation that sees Israel become a nation would be the last generation. Well, that's not true. They said a generation is 40 years. That's quite a long time.
Generation is loosely defined, and you're absolutely right. People have been saying for 2,000 years, it's happening in my day. But I would just like to throw out a couple of other things that have not really been in typical consideration in Christian fields. Number one, if we go back chronologically from the Garden of Eden, we're sitting at about 6,000 years. And I say about on purpose because there's a little bit of latitude there.
Well, that's right. Monty, to clarify that, the Bible gives us an exact chronology of years up until the flood. After the flood, we come into more modern historic times, and the Bible does not give us an exact chronology, but we're into a more modern period of history where the world has secular history. So we can certainly say that the Bible's chronology tells us that God created less than 10,000 years ago, and some who try to make it fit real tightly, and I don't argue with them much, but they say creation was about 6,000 years ago.
Well, we have a 6,000-year timeline laid out in Genesis 6:3, and that is the 6 days of man's rule until the seventh day, the day of the Lord of Christ's rule.
Well,
and what's fascinating to me is that if you lay out when Christ was sacrificed according to the festivals at the end of the fourth day, and you lay out everything on that 6,000-year timeline, it fits to the day. It's amazing.
Well, and it is interpretive to assume that we'd have a 6,000-year history of man on earth and then a 1,000-year millennial kingdom, perhaps, the seventh day of rest. But there are all kinds of particulars. Jesus was offering Israel that he would return quickly and set up a kingdom for them 2,000 years ago. That before his apostles had time to go to all the villages of Israel, he would return. He said, before some of you pass away, the Son of Man will return in power in his kingdom. And the apostle John was said, what if I will that he not die until I return?
Right.
And the apostles in the book of Acts, I mean, the indication that the Lord could return soon back then was overwhelming by his own words. And what happened was the nation of Israel rejected Jesus Christ. And so God was not about to set up a kingdom for a nation that rejected their Messiah. So God turned to the Gentiles, and we're into a different phase in human history right now. But I'm looking forward to the return of the Lord. But I've been at this a long time, Monty. Probably you have too. But I've been since 1973. I've probably read 20 books on biblical prophecy, including those by Hal Lindsey and other well-known authors. And they've taken headlines and interpreted them based on specific scriptures, and things that should have happened back in the 70s, never happened back in the 80s. And so it's a very tenuous business to say.
Well, I would completely agree with all of those points,
and
you make some great points. And I certainly don't want to monopolize your radio show, but I'd like to just throw out one more thing for ponderance.
Please
for
people. Do. Please do.
And that is, if I look at the 120 jubilees laid out in Genesis 6:3, Moses died on his 120th birthday, and his life was divided up into three segments. He was 80 years old when he delivered the Israelites from slavery on Passover. And then because of their unbelief, they wandered around until the end of his 120 years. And there's an hour worth of pictures there. But at the 120 jubilees, in the 80th jubilee is the year 4000, which is when Yeshua crucified on Passover at the end of the fourth day, as it specifies in Exodus 12, that's the year 4000. And then because of unbelief, you have another 40 jubilees waiting, keeping in mind, of course, that there are some issues in the calendar and some fluctuations. And so I'm not trying to predict an exact time, but to just lay out the picture of the timeline of how it fits.
Mm. Monty, and thank you for being aware of the time of the show. Do you think this is rude of me? I've been doing this for 17 years. I've been on the air. When somebody calls in and says they're sure from Scripture that this is the end, that we are close, and they'll say, you know, I can't give the day or the hour, but I know that we're very close. And I try to narrow them down, and quite often they won't be narrowed down, or they, They don't know. But I say, does that mean 1 year, 10 years, 50 years, 100 years? And some will say, well, we're within a year or a couple of years. And then I sort of play with that because I offer to purchase all their worldly goods, you know, for $100. Or if they own a home, $1,000, and I won't take possession of it for 10 years. And I've been doing that kind of thing for 17 years on the air. And so what I've noticed is this, even in person, when Christians come to me in person, absolutely convinced that the Lord is coming back in the fall or the next year, and I make an offer like that, well, there's no way they're going to accept it. And what I realize is they're trying to convince me. They're not really convinced, but they're trying to convince me.
You know, that's a great point, and I would say no, I don't think that's rude of you. And if we had more time, what I've done in many of the conferences, Bible conferences that I teach, is lay out, first of all, throwing this out, I don't believe that we are exactly at the time, because there are still several unfulfilled prophecies. And one of the problems with many of the books that you've read, that I'm sure I've read many of the same ones,
right,
is people like Hal Lindsey, not to take anything away from him, but allegorize away portions of Scripture that I believe were meant to be taken literally. And that is a very dangerous ground, because you cut your tether to reality. Hmm. However, when you take the Bible at its face value and believe what it says and then line up, you know, a fascinating study is to go through the exact 14,000 days to the day, which is 2,000-week time period, from Numbers 13 to Joshua. And then again from Yeshua's time in Luke 19, when he was presented as the Messiah on the day Gabriel predicted in Daniel 9, until the day the temple was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, is exactly 2,000 weeks to the day. And then you can take that same time period again from the time that the leader Moses of Israel in 1967, Moshe Dayan, gave back the Temple Mount because they were afraid of the occupants of the land, same as Numbers 13. Now you have 14,000 days again, lands you on Rosh Hashanah. There's a fascinating sequence here that shows us the impeccable precision of God's calendar,
well,
literally to
Monty,
the day in many cases.
Monty, I've taken the passages from the Bible that have chronological stamps in them, and mm-hmm. and I've put them into a spreadsheet, Microsoft Excel, and
I have done that also.
Have linked them together, and so there, I know specifically that there are places where you cannot connect the dots to within days or even years. I mean, specifically. And so when we make these calculations, you know, for example, Bishop Unger saying that creation was in 4004 BC, he is making hundreds of assumptions.
Yes,
hundreds.
Sir. I agree.
Through the period of the kings and the prophets, and even before that, even during the Exodus, he's making hundreds of assumptions that don't justify that explicit claim, unless you say, I've made 100 assumptions, and this is my best shot at it. Hey, could we close with one comment about Chuck Baldwin?
Yes, sir.
I think, Monty, I sufficiently indicated my appreciation for him and my love and respect that he's so bold and saying he would use the executive power to stop abortion. He wouldn't wait for the court to reverse itself because, in fact, the Supreme Court never reversed itself with Dred Scott and that you could own a black man, that they're property. So he said he would stop abortion. That's fabulous. But then I think he makes a grave error, and I think he does it in ignorance. He supports Ron Paul's Sanctity of Life Act. And I don't know how familiar you are with Ron Paul's Sanctity of Life Act, but that is a pro-choice state-by-state act. And what it says is that the federal courts must look the other way when the states regulate abortion. So Ron Paul says, hey, it's a states' rights issue. So the federal courts will look the other way. They have no authority. So if New York and California say you can kill kids, well, then the federal government will look the other way.
That's, well, if I may be,
Yeah.
Transparent here for just a moment. Over 20 years ago, my first kid was aborted, much to my frustration, because I attempted very hard to talk the girl out of it, and her parents insisted on an abortion. And at that point in time, I was, even though I tried to talk her out of it, I was on the fence as to whether or not it was a good thing. And the Lord was really dealing with me significantly at that point in time in my life. And what I came out of that with, originally, you know, I went into it with the understanding of, well, maybe it should be the choice. Of course, not looking at the fact that it's the mother's choice, not the baby's, and it's the baby's life that's on the line. But what I came away with is a government's job is to protect life. And while I don't agree that the government should be meddling in two-thirds of the things they are, that is the function of government, is to protect life, period.
That's right. That's right. The shedding of innocent blood is a primary function of government.
Yes, sir.
Monty, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great day.
I appreciate that. May God bless you. So, wow, pretty interesting. We hopefully will get a repaired link from C-SPAN. And my 35 minutes on C-SPAN earlier today, we will be putting a link, if it's available, on our website at KGOV, KGOV.com. And also, you might want to keep an eye out for the ABCNews.com website tomorrow for information on John McCain. And we'll see. You know, it's hard to predict with the media what they do with interviews that they conduct. But Brian Rohrbaugh, also his BBC interview, please pray that the reporters, the producer, the editors do a job that keeps his message intact for an audience in England. And also Joe Scott and Dee DeRoche, they're pro-life heroes here in the Denver area, that their interview with Al Jazeera today, that goes well. So they've already done the interview, that something, the truth of God somehow comes across in all these interviews, all these opportunities. So thanks for tuning in. Bob Benyart Live is online at KGOV, KGOV.com. We've got a full-color catalog of our Bible study albums, our DVDs, and our books, the books I've written, the plot and overview of the whole Bible, and Does God Exist? Battle Royale 7 against Zaketh, a psychologist, the resident atheist over at TheologyOnline.com. And so many resources we have here, especially our government resources, including the Focus on the Strategy series. In Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school in Arvada. Maranatha, check them out. And remember to do right and risk the consequences.